is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Friday, June 14th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Neary, and I shall be your host for the day as we continue our new series. Yes, 2 weeks ago, we announced a new series called Keeping It Real on Guardian Radio AM, where we have a co-host Yannick.
Hi.
Yes. And welcome again, Unique. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good.
Good. And welcome again to Guardian Radio AM as we continue our bi-weekly, is that every 2 weeks? Yes, our bi-weekly series of Keeping It Real. And we did an introductory show two weeks ago, where we started a conversation. We started a conversation on young girls being pursued by older men.
Right.
We started that conversation and we was asking why this happens. Who is the aggressor? Who should be blamed? We had a conversation on whether young women are different from 20 years ago. We started a conversation on what is it that is causing this anomaly regarding this relationship, right? And you were given your past experience of dating your history about... encountering older men, right? And we wanted to hear your response, your opinion on such. So that's where we can continue, right? And what we do is do a recap. We'll do a recap of 2 weeks ago's show. Okay. And just so the listening audience can be acclimatized of what our series is going to be about.
Right.
Keeping It Real, a bi-weekly show about relationships, about women, about men, about bohemian it real in general. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you have been pursued by older men when you were younger.
Yes.
And the last time we were here, I was basically blaming older men for targeting younger women. Like, we were the sharks inside the water. And the young women are vulnerable young girls, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not their fault. And you were hinting that some girls are aggressive.
Yes, because some are forced to grow up at an early age, and therefore they are exposed to a lot of things, and they have no fear, you know? They have no fear, knowing that they can easily, let's use these terms where they would say, swing or trick an older guy into giving them something or into taking care of them. They have no fear because they probably was already hurt or exposed by some other gentleman in their past or in their family to make them feel like it's okay, they're doing nothing wrong.
From your experience of dating, and just for the listening audience, you said your mom died early when you were young. I guess give us a brief history of that so that people can appreciate what's happening. Sorry.
Well, my mom died when I was 17. It was a few months out of high school for me. Right after, we had to move off the island, and then a year later, we actually came back to Nassau, and so I was 18 at that time, and I had to get a job. I had to take care of myself and some of my siblings at the time, and so, I mean, you know, I was young, I was fresh, I was vibrant, I was out there, and it was for me, it was trying to help myself and, you know, trying to get on and meet people and just for me to be able to survive. But if you look vulnerable and young and seem a little humble, you know, that is like a trap for me saying, I can help you, but, you know, I also feel like I can get something from you. So sometimes you enter a job or you go to seek help from probably a government agency or a private agency or just looking for a job, just seeking help. And because of, you know, your disposition, they can either help you or they can either give you an option of them getting something out of it if they help you. And so if you're not strong-minded, if you're not strong-headed, or if you're not a little wise at the time, like, you can get pulled in. Like, they can make it seem glittery. They can make it seem innocent. It can be just like, I want to help you, you know. I want to make sure you're straight. And at the same time, you know,
they have a plan. What do you mean, make sure you're straight?
When they say make sure you're straight, meaning that whatever you need, they want to make sure you're sorted out.
That's a good thing, isn't it? If I come across a young lady and I want to make sure she's straight, like I said, nothing's wrong with that, surely.
Nothing is wrong with that. But if I owe you something and I don't even know that I owe you something, then that's the danger. Because I met a guy and I always think about him because he's one of a kind. He gave me a car.
Someone just give you a car?
Yeah. He gave me a car. And he was like, he wanted to sell it, but he knew I needed it more because I had siblings who were young who I actually had to take to school. And at that time, I was either catching a bus or actually walking with them.
How old were you then?
I was 19, 20 at the time.
So you was 19 years old and someone just gave you one car?
Yes.
Because you're a nice lady.
Yes, just because he felt like I needed it more than him. And he felt like it could have helped me, you know, in the ways I needed to be helped at that time. And so he told me, you know, he said, I meet a lot of young girls, and instead of me trying to beg them, that's the term he used, or instead of them trying to, like, throw themselves on me, he said, I always try to help them, and I always try to tell them, like, you know, it's good men out here that are willing to, like, you know, help for no reason. But I told him, I say, not a lot. It's rare. And he just laughed. And, yeah, he gave me that car. And several times afterwards, he helped me big, whereas he paid some bills for me.
He paid some bills for you, too?
Yes. He bought me.
And he wasn't your friend?
He was my friend, but
yeah,
he
friend.
Didn't.
Good friend, right?
Yeah, he was my good friend. But I'm just making
sure.
We didn't ever get involved in being intimate or in a relationship.
But this is a different type of friend we talk about.
Yes, and this is the only person in Nassau who I met like that, ever. And that's why I always remember him.
And he was a Bohemian man?
A Bohemian man.
Yeah, this gentleman, it have a different name.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He gets swing.
I don't think so, because he wanted to help. And I didn't really ask. Like he knew I needed a car, because most of the times he would see me catching bus or walking, or sometimes he would offer to give me a ride and I would take it. And like he said he wanted to sell the car, but he knew I could have used it. So, I mean,
did you see him?
I guess he was being an angel. I don't think that has happened to everybody. It should sometimes, but the reality is that that's rare. So
let's talk about you being 17 and bus drivers. You, your friends, jumped on the bus. Bus drivers have a reputation. I'm not sure.
Yes, they do.
So you just jump on it, right?
Yes, they
do. I'm not sure if the reputation is legitimate or people just blaming them. But they're saying that some bus drivers take advantage of young school girls. Did you see that when you were going to school?
Yes, because, you know, they probably know the type and they're familiar with the route they drive. So they know the young girls and they get friendly with them. They probably tell them they don't have to pay bus fee no more. Or when they come on the bus, they probably offer to, you know, I don't know, appeal to their likeness. Because, you know, a lot of young girls, you can tell if they're interested in going to school. You can tell if, you know, they're sociable. You can tell if, you know, they're forward. So, yeah, I think that they go after a certain type. But they try anybody if they can. But, like, most of the times, they will find the ones that they can see, you know, they ain't getting no problems for. Because if you on a bus stop 11 o'clock, you don't want to go to school. So that right there is a green flag for an older man to say, let me ask her what she doing going to school this late. Just to start the conversation. And then you still on the bus. Obviously, you don't want to go to school. So if he don't feel like he get you, he can eventually get you because you ain't even wanting to go to school. You on the bus up 10, 11 o'clock, and we start this conversation. I pass your school twice, and you ain't want to get off. Sometimes
so
it's
that's
like
a sign
that.
You said. So mm-hmm. if for the listening audience who have female children, young girls, and you see that 9 o'clock pass, they ain't on the bus stop yet, they ain't reaching school, 10 o'clock pass, more than likely they can get targeted.
Yes. And especially if it's past school hours, because even me as a woman, I'm wondering if a child is out of school or they just going to school, like why they just leaving their parents' house? I mean, sometimes it may be a case whereas they probably live far, they probably did not know ride, or they just really was late this morning. But you can't keep seeing the same young girl or sets of young children doing the same thing and not thinking nothing about it. Like, it's obvious. And then some children come out of homes whereas nobody parenting them. So they leave, they get up 9 o'clock, they leave 11 o'clock. Who cares? They probably know they ain't going to school. The parents probably assuming that, or whoever's in the house probably assuming that they left for school because they see them in uniform. But you can't go to no school after 11. Mm. Right?
No,
so where you going?
So. Where you going? You and I grew up in the inner city, right? And we know stories. We've come across neighbors, right, who you either know personally and you know their lifestyle, or who you've heard about where the mother, because it always seems to be a single parent home,
yes,
right, where the mother is aware that their young teenage girl has an older boyfriend.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
What causes that? What causes a mother to cast a blind eye and say, man, I ain't seen nothing. You just go do what you got to do and bring it for everyone else.
Well, I feel like the mother probably gave up, because for a mother to give up a child like that, or for a mother to condone in a child doing something like that, like, she's not in her right mind. She probably lose it somewhere and she probably gave up. So she don't care. Because even though it's happening a lot, like, it ain't normal. I'm a mother.
Okay? It's not a normal thing.
It's not a normal thing for a mother to do that. So even though it happens a lot in the inner cities, because that's the reality, that's not normal for a mother to be okay with something like that happening to her child when she's supposed to, you know, be a parent.
But what if the young girl said, this is my boyfriend, he loves me. Surely a mother cannot interrupt love.
A mother can't interrupt a young girl being in her mother's house and saying, this is my boyfriend, I love him. Sound like that problem was happening a long time. Because, I mean, it's okay for you to, you know, have friends at school, and if you out of school, you want to date or whatever. But if you're living in your mother's house and your mother is a parent and you're supposed to be doing as you should as a child, you should never be able to tell your mother. You should be scared to tell your mother something like that. This is my boyfriend and I love him. That's what that means.
So you don't believe in a 16-year-old who'll have a 10-year-old boyfriend?
No.
26? 26 is too old for a 16-year-old?
Yes.
But what about a 25-year-old? Is that too old for a 16-year-old?
Yes. To me, to each his own.
But 16 is the age of consent.
16 may be the age of consent, but that doesn't mean that they're ready or they're experienced.
They're more mature than a 16-year-old boy. They could handle themselves.
That's what they think. That's how they look. But my son is 17, and I talk to him every day. And it don't feel no different than when he was 9.
So you're trying to say a 26-year-old woman can't date your 17-year-old son?
No. And I don't think he would be interested in somebody that old, so.
All boys interested in older women, man.
Well, that's true, because if he see a girl, well, no.
Developed,
let me give an example.
Woman.
His story is he's go to the bank every now and again, because I try to teach him to do his own business. Mm-hmm. And it's this young teller there that he says is friendly with him, cuts up with him, and he feel like she like him. So I say, so what you gonna do about that? He say, I can talk to her, I can heal her again when I go, and I can see if I get a number. So I cannot say that. Yes, he is attracted to the opposite sex. Probably not that old, but if she's working in the bank, she may be 20, she may be 19, 20. I don't know what age you can start there, but I saw her before. She looks to be 20-something. And
she works in the bank?
Yes. And he,
I could tell you a story. When I started my little job when I was 17-year-old, mm-hmm. and when the bank teller saw my account, they just be nice to me all the time. Hey.
Right?
Yeah, so, I just said. Okay. I can imagine she being nice.
She
know the bank, how the bank account look.
I don't know that. I don't know if she's just being nice, but he says that every time he goes there, she calls him to serve him, and they have good conversations,
of course.
And she always smiley and cutting up. Mm. So, yeah, he probably could be attracted to this 20-something-year-old, but in actuality, like, they're not on the same level. So, it may be
a
while.
What would you do if your 17-year-old boy child come to you and said, Mommy, my girlfriend is 5-10 years older than me? Say 5 is only for 17, it's 22, 23, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not old, eh?
Well,
for a 17-year-old boy.
For a 17-year-old boy, if he's matured, maybe they can, you know, have some connection.
It could be some connection
it
now.
Other than physical. It might have some connection.
What about if you had a 17-year-old girl and you come up with a 24-year-old boyfriend? That's the same, eh? You expect your girl child to have an older man.
Well, sometimes, yes. In some circumstance, you will have, especially with females. But I try to talk to my kids a lot, basically too much, and so they can make proper decisions for themselves, because you may find somebody older than you that you may get along with, that you may really could be yourself around and, you know, can be comfortable, and y'all might have a real good connection. But that doesn't mean that, you know, y'all could have the same in a relationship, or that y'all will be evenly yoked in a relationship.
I have Texas who's asking about your father when your mother died. Was he active inside your life?
No. Not really.
What you mean no? Not really.
Well, our active father would probably help pay bills. He wasn't doing that. But if I ever probably went by him and I asked him for something for his younger children, because he would never give me anything. You know, as far as he's concerned, I was growing.
You was only 17.
That's right. So, and that's the next reality for inner cities. As far as he's concerned, I was out of school. I was able to handle it. And I was growing. So if I ever took, like, my younger siblings there, you know, and he had it, or if he wanted to, he probably would give it to them.
You were 17, your mom died. How many younger siblings you had at that time?
Six.
So you were number 7?
I'm number 1.
No, I mean, total. There's 7 of you.
There's
7 of you. You're the eldest. Mm-hmm. Your mother died, right?
Right.
Your father never lived with you.
No.
And he didn't basically contribute.
No.
Despite knowing that your mom transitioned and you needed extra help and support. And then you being the oldest sibling, you took on the mommy role. You took on the mommy role. And I remember from my last conversation, you had to go get social services to render support. And then you had, I think, aunt or some sort who could help every so often.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And how hard, I mean, apparently this is a typical story in the inner city,
right,
where
yes.
older siblings are now forced to be mothers at 17, six, even younger than that, 16, 17, 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
Forced to make decisions to take care of the rest of the siblings, keep the whole family together,
right?
Right? Did social services ever come to say, hey, I got to split you all up? This ain't working.
No, never. Everybody thought I was doing a good job. So, never. It was a point of time that I was doing such a good job that they said that they can no longer help me anymore.
Explain that to me. What would they call a good job, and then what you mean never don't help you no more? What they stopped?
Well, first of all, we was getting SBO.
SBO is what?
Survivor's Benefit Orphan.
Okay.
And I wasn't getting it because...
You were 17.
Yes.
So that stopped, National Insurance stopped that money quick. Say, no, you're too old to get that.
Yeah, I never got it. I was never qualified to get it. Okay. But everybody else was. So I was basically getting monies for everybody else. And in the Christmas, they would do, what do you call it? They would give us like probably, if I was getting like $300 in the Christmas. They
hold on, this is per month, right?
Yeah, this is per month.
Okay.
Okay, so say I was getting $300, and I don't think it was all of that, but I think it was according to each child. So say I was getting $300. In the Christmas, they would give you a bonus of probably like $100 more. And then, you know, you probably get like, they have different stuff going on. Sometimes, like when back to school opening up, you can get the vouchers to go to Sandy's and the different stores to get the school items. And then in the Christmas, you would get like, probably gift bags with groceries and like free turkey or ham. And after a while, after several years of me and my siblings just, you know, going to school, because not me, well, they were going to school. I was working, taking care of the overhead bills. I was getting the check from social service, which basically was to buy groceries. So like, after one or two of my siblings actually graduated from high school without any problems, and this is government school, they got government jobs. And this is like right out of high school for like two of them. And when the Department of Statistics came around, because the social service sent them out to like inquire on who's working the homes, who doesn't work, and sorts of things like that. You know, we told them the truth because, you know, they ask us questions. In order for people to help you properly, you have to be honest. So we told them who was working, who was not working. And when I went back to receive a check, or I think to get reinstated, because you have to keep going back like every year to make sure like you're mm-hmm. still alive or whatever. They was like, oh, we see like two of your siblings, you know, they just work for government. And I was like, okay, you know, they just graduated. You know, they had all the qualifications, so they got their government jobs. And they was like, okay, then, that was it. And I was thinking, like, why they would ask that?
That's it for your rest?
No, that was, they just dropped it. And I was wondering, like, why would they ask that? They should be happy, like, you know, the children they actually helped are coming up and trying to help themselves. But they let it go. They didn't say anything. I guess they started to do investigations. And then I was working at PMH. I was on the government program, 52 weeks, and I was doing auxiliary nurse. And one day I had to pick up a school voucher to get uniforms and stuff. And I think they saw me in my uniform mm-hmm. and my ID or whatever. And like the time after that, when I had to go get reinstated again, they was like, oh, we can't help y'all no more or whatever.
There'll always be some woman there watching you.
Somebody. Yeah, was so like, we can't help y'all no more.
And how many of your siblings were still in school at this time?
Probably four.
So you had four siblings still in school, mm-hmm. right? You had no mother from 17. You now hustling. And you had one or two more of your siblings who finally get a government job. And they decided that you're all making too much money.
Y'all don't need heaven.
Need the help for the other four children, despite right. you weren't getting no mommy mm-hmm. and no daddy.
Yeah. So basically, they told us, like, you know, and I kind of understood it because I know a lot of other persons out there in the country have it harder and they need immediate help, just like how we were in the beginning. So, you know, I let it go. And I said, because everything I feel happened, God allowed it to happen. So I say, God, if that means that's it for social service, that means I don't need no more help from them. So I take it like how they give it to me. And I can remember one lady asking me there. She was like, because I had a son by this time.
How old were you now?
I am now...
No, at that time, what were you talking about? How old were you then?
I probably was 21, 22.
She's a young woman.
Mm-hmm.
You just haven't fitting your life together now.
Mm-hmm. And I had a son at that time, and he was a part of the check as well. And I guess after they saw me working and they... did the statistics where they see two other persons working for government. And as far as they're concerned, like, enough people working in the house to help everyone. So that's just how they call it off. And the lady did ask me, because Hubert Ingram was the prime minister at the time. She was like, Hubert Ingram is not your baby dad. No, she said, she asked, sorry, she said, is Hubert Ingram your baby daddy? Mm. Yeah. And then I didn't answer, because obviously not. And she's like, so we don't have to help y'all. If we say it finish, it finish. And then that was it. No biggie, but.
That's big deal for me, because I think it's unfair for what you gone through.
And I couldn't for young, stay there. I couldn't dwell there. I couldn't stay there adults. And cry. I had to take it as whatever they say and go.
And I know what a 52-week program pays, right? I know what introductory job in government pays.
Right.
And these are young children just
at the time, the 52 weeks was paying $206.
And they claimed that was enough money to take care of all the sex you want. Mm-hmm. And that Hubert Ingram wasn't your daddy, so they ain't obligated to assist at all. Go there and hustle. Mm-hmm. And do what women is do.
Right.
Do what women
is
do.
And this is how the young girls get out there. To feel no way to ask anybody for money. They could see you with your wife in church, and if you stare at them twice, they feel like they could approach you, because nobody respect nobody. Nobody care if people hurt. Nobody care what you're going through. So they don't care what the other person going through. And that's why I feel like some of them have the courage to say, I don't care if he married. I don't care if that's my friend daddy. I don't care if my mommy know him. I don't care if he's my daddy friend. I need money. He won't give me money. And what they say? Exchange ain't no robbery.
Exchange ain't no robbery.
Yeah, they became cold at it.
Yeah. As a young man on the job, I've come across young girls working in the city who was hurting. Mm-hmm. And they say exchange ain't no robbery. I have this pride thing is I ain't giving no woman no my money. Right? Okay. You can work for my money. Oh, God have mercy. But I hope my wife listens to that. Right? But I ain't giving no woman no money.
Right.
On your young age working, right? Has anyone approached you, say, boy, I see you, this one hurting. I can try be a sponsor. I know you had a sponsor who, the good gentleman, mm-hmm. I'm not going to call him a jabroni. The good gentleman.
He's a good, decent man.
So you keep on telling me. So the good gentleman, the good gentleman didn't ask for nothing. He just give you money because you're a good lady.
Oh, he always say that he is scared of me, you know? Like, he means that.
You're a
know,
shark.
No.
You're a monster.
I think he meant to say, because I made him explain it one day. So I was like, how come you never, you know, ask me for nothing? And he just look and smile. He say he's scared because he's married. And he feel like if something Mr. ever happened between us, he will not be able to stop.
See, I can stop you right there. My money belongs to my wife. In fact, she's take the whole paycheck. She's make sure it comes there, then she give me some money. You say this good married man was able to move money from his wife and give to you? See, you look at that way.
Maybe it was not from his wife. Maybe she couldn't see it. Maybe she couldn't access this money.
What money that belongs to?
And that's his wife's money? It belongs to her, but she may not know of it. You know the type of way? You know, when guys want to do something, they're flying away.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He's flying away.
They're flying away.
So, in your experience...
Because watch this. How did he explain the car? Because I know he told he was about to sell it whenever they plan on selling it.
And my wife was going to say, bring the money when you sell
thank
it.
Thank you. So I would say that too. Where's the money for the car? Mm-hmm. So he probably got some monies and say, this is for the car. Who knows? I don't know. That wasn't none of my business. I didn't ask. And that's what he did.
I have a texter asking me, your baby daddy for the first child. I'm not sure how many children you have. Sorry. Was he a great support for you initially? Because I know your son's older now. He's 17 and he's working and doing his own. But I'm talking about you being a 21-year-old, you trying to take care of your siblings and now your child, right? And you have a young boyfriend, right? Was he there?
Yeah, I was one of those young girls who had baby for older person.
Oh, you get an old man?
No, well, 20-something.
No, now you got to work with the age for me. How much older is this man to you?
He's older.
I see you even tell me the age. I can let it slide. He's a matured man who took care of you.
Okay, well, it's a funny story.
We can get down to the story eventually. Yeah.
In one of these episodes.
I can write it down now.
But for the most part, When my baby daddy and me broke up, I was actually 5 months pregnant.
Again? Mm-hmm. Over the first one. I'm trying
this,
to get...
This is the same baby.
So...
I only had one.
So you had one child, a good son. And you the baby daddy, your baby daddy, mm-hmm. and you broke up when you was 5 months.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
And he said, if you leave me, I'm not going to take care of this baby.
That's understandable. If you leave me, I won't be able to take care of the baby for.
Oh, okay. Well,
all that's one package.
I left.
So you just shouldn't expect to get anything, eh?
Okay. Well, children are made with two persons. So if you feel like you can make something and don't look back at it, then if you could do that, if it ain't you to do that, then on you. But I know I couldn't. So that's what he said. He said that. And I was like, okay. Because he wanted to cheat and he wanted me to stay.
Mm.
So I said, I'm not doing this. I'm not staying. I'm going to go back to Nassau and I'm going to be home until I have my baby. You know, because at the end of the day, like, he couldn't scare me. My daddy wasn't taking care of my siblings. One more in the bundle wasn't going to make much of a difference.
So did he render support, like any type of financial support?
When he got over it, when he saw, like, I was actually... you know, handling my own and stuff. He was trying to help me through his family. He would send the money to his sister, and she would do what she wanted with it. She never gave it to me, so, yeah.
And you made it still?
Yeah.
Good. Jobs and young girls, especially girls who are in inner city, and those bosses who say, I will employ you, if you help me out. Do you know of any stories like that? Did you have any boss who ever put that position? Said, man, I'll take care of you. Make sure you get promoted. Make sure you get a good position. But, you know, exchange, you know, robbery.
Yes. It was actually when I was at PMH. And
government employee. Go ahead, finish. Sorry.
He was a nice doctor.
Oh, I like doctors. I love the government. Tell me the story, man.
And he was a nice doctor, a gynecologist to be exact. And he always, you know, come look for me, bring me lunch. I think Oatback was by the dock. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at that time. So I used to have like Oatback every other day. He just, you know, was being extra nice until he was like, you want to let's go sometime? And I was like, okay, it's... this concert coming up that I really want to go to. And, I mean, I don't know if you can come, but we could go there. And he was like, okay, sure. So we met out there. I came with some of my friends. And he came, I think, alone. Yes, he came alone. And, yes, he was married. So I was like, oh, whatever. Because, you know, he being nice and stuff. But as I used to be up and down with him in the hospital, like on my breaks, a lady doctor saw it, and she was like, be careful in here. She's like, because you're young, and everybody going to want to talk to you. She said, but be careful because, you know, doctors are sick also. Mm. They have the virus, and most of them are married, and they ain't up to nothing good. So, you know, I always had that in the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Have you ever dated any married men?
Well, this would be the closest thing right here, this doctor, because... like, he actually used to take me places, like, say places, like, not big places, but we went for drinks, we went for food, we went to a bathing suit store one time because I wanted a bathing suit. He didn't see me in it or nothing, but he wanted to, like, pick it out for me. So this was the closest thing to being involved with a married man. And that same night at the concert, he was like, he wanted to get a room, what am I going to do? So I was like, oh, I said, I can come right back and I can let you know. And I never came out of that concert. And he said he slept in the parking lot waiting for me.
See, you call him evil woman. We're going on a commercial break. I see your producer. This is Guardian Radio AM. Of course, we're doing our bi-weekly series, Keeping It Real with Yannick. And she's telling us stories of growing up in the inner city, overcoming obstacles, taking care of her younger siblings, dating, what's happening in this inner city and why things happening. And we'll continue this conversation when we'll be right back.
me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that.
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows it's you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
It's gonna be a hot summer. Get ready for the NACAC Athletics 3rd Annual New Life Invitational as the race to Paris continues. Join us on Sunday, June 16th at the original Thomas A. Robinson National Stadium as Team Bahamas and over 170 international track and field athletes from over 18 countries compete for another chance to qualify for the Paris Olympics. Gates open at 5 p.m. Races start at 6 p.m. Don't miss the exciting individual races and relays from world champions and Olympians. Watch the epic showdowns between countries from around the world, like Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, the United States, Canada, Liberia, and our very own Team Bahamas as they all battle in one of their last chances to qualify for Paris. Buy your tickets today at NACACParis.com or NACACParis.com. That's the New Life Invitational, Sunday, June 16th. It's gonna be hot. You don't want to miss it.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri, and of course, we are doing our bi-weekly series, Keeping It Real with Yannick. Yannick, when you were young, when you were in school,
yes,
were there other classmates who had similar circumstances like you that the teachers should have been aware that, hey, these people are having a rough time, they need extra support, they need guidance because of whatever is happening at home?
Yes, that was a certain young girl. Mina was in the same homeroom, and then we had, I think, language in the same, we also had language together. And she always used to be by herself. She used to be extra quiet. She never socialized. Her uniforms used to look like they never used to be washed. And, you know, she always had a sense, whereas either she didn't bathe or she slept in a bed where somebody peed. So she didn't have a lot of friends, and if people did come around her, it was probably to tease her. And sometimes she used to sleep in class. So, and most government school teachers, if they're your homeroom teacher, they're basically like your parent. So sometimes they might, you know, use obscene language and be like, whatever, get your hip up, or why are you sleeping? Or they just might be smart and ask you, like, you don't get no sleep last night, what you been doing? And she would never answer. And so some days I used to walk home with her because we live in the same area. And my daddy had this thing, whereas I had to be home by 3:15. And Aaron Bailey used to out 3:05. So she used to always be, you know, walking home by herself. And she used to be out the gate before most of the students, like me, because I had to be home at 3:15. So I don't know what her excuse was. But I know I had to be home early. And me and I used to end up walking home sometimes because we live, like, close to each other. Anyway, and I just asked her, I said, like, you know, why you don't have no friends, and, like, why you be sleeping in class, and, like, why your mommy didn't buy you no new uniform and stuff or whatever? And she was like, well, my mommy dead, and I live with my auntie, and, you know, they just treat me bad, and my brother's supposed to be going to school, but he don't go to school because they never got his uniform, and I don't have lunch money sometimes, and we don't eat sometimes in the evenings. And she says, sometimes I just have to go, like, she'll go help some neighbors. Sometimes she say, like, for lead jugs or whatever, just to have money sometimes, or to buy her school books or whatever. And I was like, wow. I was like, me being a child, I was like, why you didn't go to guidance the guidance counselor at the school? And she's like, you know, she ain't want nobody to know. And I was like, you can't, like, you know, I mean, I know you feel shame or whatever. I say, but you have to let somebody know, because if somebody know that, you know, you could get help. I say, you see how the children just go to guidance and get the lunch and they'd be on the program and whatever like that. She's like, yeah, but she don't want nobody to know. And she just scared, basically scared.
So in your experience, do you believe there's still children like that in the system now, that too scared to tell anybody but hurting?
Yes, they are. And it shows. You can look at a child and see if a child is well-kept, if a child is properly taken care of, or if a child is being hurt. You can look at a child and see that. We were children, too.
I know when I was in primary school, I went to T.A. Thompson Primary, right? Right on top of the hill on Blue Road. We had people on the lunch program. Mm-hmm. I've seen children unkept. The uniform dirty. They have that smell, mm-hmm. right? They are part of that remedial class in the back. Like, they're not learning anything.
Nobody
right?
care for them. But it's like nobody concerned.
I've never seen
concerned.
Teachers reached out. Like, say, hey, I can help. I mean, teachers are overwhelmed now because they have like 30, 40 students inside the class. And to spend their own money on that one child.
You know, right. And then the teachers is one part of raising the child. And then it's teachers, parents, people in the community, church. You know, it's all sorts of outlets that we have to think about it when it concerns children, because some people would send their kids to summer school with a church and that child still would not be able to say, I need help, or we don't have food at home. You understand? Because either that child feel threatened by the parent, or that child feel like he's nothing going to come out of it because they've been there before where they speak out on it and nothing came out of it.
So what should those adults do? They see the child is hurting, but you know the child's not asking for help. How can they get help to this child?
Well, when I was in primary school, I was like the child who didn't want to ask for help. And then my sister, she used to be on them food program lines like normal. She used to go twice if she could, okay? But I just say this to say, every child is not the same. And we came out the same house, same mommy, same daddy. But I was shy, intimate, and I was like, you know, I don't want nobody to know. And she's like, I don't care, I'm hungry. So children are different. First, you should just, you know, ask them if they are okay. And if they don't open up, that's a green flag for you to say, okay, something is wrong. I need a different approach. Then I would ask the child if they're hungry or where your parents is, normal things. Because, you know, children, even though they've been exposed, they still have innocence in them, whereas they know if somebody care with them to say, okay, this person won't know because they probably care. So let me say it. But I, as a young mother, single in the ghettos, I've helped many persons alone, like without their parents knowing, without me ever seeing or meeting their parents. I just sit down or I be home and I just watch the children pass by. I could swear, I don't know how, because I used to help a young boy. He was in R.M. Bailey Wilds. My kids was in C.H. Reeves. And I don't know how it started. I don't know how it started, but I know I called him one day. He was walking. He was looking strange. And I call him. I say, why are you walking around here looking like that? And he's like, he don't know where he going. You know, he just the same bad stuff. I don't know where I go in. I don't have no bus money. I don't have no lunch money. And I was like, so where you come from? Why you ask your parents money, where your parents is and stuff like that? He's like, oh, I live with my grammy in Montel Heights. And my grammy don't have no money. And I was waiting on my auntie to bring me some money, but she didn't bring it. She usually just bring me money sometimes. And that was it. I didn't need to know where your parents was. I didn't ask nothing. I just tell him, I say, every morning, you come here, and once I have it, I can give you whatever I have. Sometimes it used to be like $5 the least. Sometimes if I had it, I would give him 10 because, you know, I know how high school is. But every morning when he came, God allowed me to have something to give him. And he did that for like a year and a half. And then I didn't see him no more, like for months. And then one day I went to the food store right around where I live, and he was in the food store parking. He became a Packer boy.
Is having a summer job or after school job for especially boys, even girls now, mm-hmm. is it important?
Yes.
Because they know there's a law saying that you aren't supposed to be working.
It's important.
But are there families who are so destitute that the money that coming into the home is basically primarily is the child? Is that happening?
Yes, that's happening. And right now, because my son was a packer also, it's not bad if your son or your daughter wants to work at an early age, parents. That is a good sign. Okay, that shows self-motivation. That shows self-awareness. And that shows, like, they understand exactly what it is before their time. So that's a good thing. And it also shows that they want to be independent, not having to depend on you, their parent, for everything. And that could allow them to, you know, enter maturity properly. But in the food stores now, and in, like, the budgets and stuff, they ask the kids for their report card. And if you're not making a certain GPA, they're not going to allow you to continue to work. So it is good because they are looking out for their education on that part, making sure that they know that their schoolwork comes first and that that is important. So if you don't get 2.5 and up, they won't allow you to work.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, if you don't have 2.5, that means there's something wrong at home and that you need to work. But we have a caller who wants to engage you. We are speaking to Yannick, who's our bi-weekly series, Keeping It Real. Producer, patch the caller through before we go. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Neri.
Good morning. I can hear you, cousin. You can hear Yannick?
Yes.
Go ahead.
And good morning to your guest.
Hi, good morning.
You know, what she is talking about, the parking is really good because I had my son start parking. But he had a learning disability. I found that out very late. And they still kept him on parking. That pushed him to the point now he's a man. And he now works with Carnival as a ferry boat captain.
Wow. Yes.
Because why? He never lost that need or that want to work. He never lost that will.
Exactly.
You know? He kept that, and that's what I figure. If you have more of these young men working, and I don't think budget them to do like that. Where it is encouraging, everybody's not book smart. So I don't think they should be that hard with them because, like Mr. Neri said, those who need it the most are the ones who aim to be able to get it because they're not educationally there.
Right.
You understand?
And that's what they do now. And it's good and it's bad because, like you say, everybody is not going to be, you know, on the same level education-wise. But I feel like if they would just use the conduct of the person or, you know, the character.
Not just that, you know. You could get a report card, but encourage them
to
work at upping their grades. I think would also bring that. Because if they're not there working and they're already getting poor grades, what do you think they are doing? You know, so we want a better country. So for me, I've done a lot of the same things that you do, that you've done with helping old kids. I've done that, you know, in the past because I wasn't where you were with helping family members, but I had a nephew that I had to bring up by myself. So I understand where what you're saying. I think more people like you need to be out there doing more of that. And we can encourage a lot of these young men to stay off the street.
That's right. That's right. That's the end goal. Because at the end where you start, it's where you finish.
Thank you very much, Carl.
Thank you.
Good. It's 11:59. It goes by quickly.
Yes.
We have a bi-weekly show with Yannick called Keeping It Real, where she tells a life shared story. She shares a life story. She intertwines it with situations that's going on in the Bahamas right now, right? And she's going to engage us and have us engage her, right? Give her opinion on things and what we should be doing to assist Bahamians in general. And I want to let them know I appreciate her for making herself vulnerable, to telling her truth, to tell her story of overcoming and power. And I just want to say congratulations for all that, right? Anyway, this is Guiding Radio AM with C.A. Neri. We will be back on Monday to have another lively and provocative show. Have a wonderful day.